welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski, librarian, writer, and all-around bookworm. Today I'm chatting with Suzanne Park, whose new romantic comedy is called So We Meet Again. In this book, a young Korean-American woman's journey to finding a new career and new love means learning to embrace the awkward and unexpected, exploring familial expectations, finding your voice, and unimaginably falling for your childhood rival. Suzanne Park is a Korean-American writer who was born and raised in Tennessee. In her former life, Suzanne was a stand-up comedian. She also graduated from Columbia and received an MBA from UCLA. Suzanne currently resides in Los Angeles, and her books have been featured in best of lists in NPR, Real Simple, BuzzFeed, The Today Show, and many more. Suzanne Park, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm so excited to have you on.
I'm very excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, this book was such a treat, and I think readers are going to really love escaping into this world and meeting these characters, and I've been so excited to see how much great buzz it's getting. I just watched the clip on the Today Show, which I want to ask you about. It sounds so exciting, and I know I liked how they referred to it as comfort food as a read. I think that's definitely true. So can you tell listeners a bit about So We Meet Again and the characters in this book?
Sure. When I wrote So We Meet Again, I wrote the entire book during the pandemic, just last summer is when I started writing it. And so when I was writing it, I wanted it to be a comfort write. And then hopefully that would have translated into a comfort read for the final person picking up the book. So I included things that I found comforting, or at least comforting to write about, which were food and family and finding yourself and falling in love. And overall, it's a part coming of age story, part love story. And it's about an overworked Korean American investment banker. Her name is Jessie Kim. And she moves back home after getting laid off on Zoom. And starts an online cooking show. And while she's at home, back at home in Tennessee, she runs into her childhood rival, like her middle school nemesis, Daniel Choi, who she thinks has a perfect life. But as she gets to know him, she realizes she couldn't be more wrong.
There's so many things I loved about this book. And, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed was sort of watching her kind of entrepreneurial journey and sort of the twists and turns and getting to kind of be on that ride along with her. And of course, hearing about all the food and the recipes. Are you a big cook yourself, or how did all of that work? Because I would imagine, you know, to write about all of this, you'd have to sort of be doing a lot of cooking, you know, at the same time to kind of inform it all.
It's funny, when people ask me if I enjoy cooking, just in general, I like cooking and eating, but I hate shopping. So that is the thing that actually holds me back from cooking. I've realized, especially during the last 2 years, but I think I do enjoy cooking. I don't do it as often as I would like, just because of, you know, busy lifestyles and you know, it's just sometimes just hard to wrap around your head around kind of like a menu that can feed my very picky daughter and my very particular husband, and then who just eats whatever's left over between the two. So I usually
that sounds familiar.
I think a lot of people can relate to that if you are feeding more than one mouth. So I've had to figure out how to adapt and, you know, take one ingredient and use it across different foods, but they could end up being like in a pasta dish all the way to just being grilled chicken to being on top of a salad, depending on just like what people's, you know, preferences are. And so I find myself kind of doing what the main character does, which is hacking meals and just using ingredients that you can use in one dish and putting it across different other dishes. And when I came up with that idea, it was back to the point of me being inspired by things that were comforting to me in the pandemic. There were also things that were very funny to me during the pandemic that you'll find in this book. One is grocery delivery, which I had this whole scene where I just make fun of the idea of going on an app and asking a delivery person to deliver something. But, you know, the character has this free form section where she can write whatever she wants in the instructions on how to deliver the food. And she gets what she needs to, the delivery person actually gives it to her. And in kind of my real life world, a year ago, I was using a lot of meal kits myself, trying to figure out like what I can, you know, quickly make during the pandemic and then freeze and refrigerate. And I ended up kind of getting backlogged with having all these meal kits and having random things expire more quickly than others, and then having to figure out what to do with that. I also cycled through a lot of different companies trying to figure out what's the best fit. In the end, I ended up preferring a kids meal kit delivery service.
Interesting.
I think it was just more of a crowd pleaser, and it was just easier to make. And so the funny thing is like, and they also came with cookies, so that also helped a little bit. Yes.
Can I ask what that one's called?
Yeah, One Potato. I think I might actually one day go back to that. It was, I ended up canceling it just because we did still end up with a surplus, but that one had flavors that were more kid friendly, and they ended up being easier to work with when you did want to hack them. So that's how the idea came to be, is just my real life world kind of intersecting with what I was trying to create in fiction. And it ended up being, you know, something I can actually use in a book.
Yeah. And I kept thinking as I was reading, like, somebody should really take this idea and run with it, because I don't know, I'm convinced in the novel that this would be a huge success. So that was fun to read about. Well, you know, I love the characters, and I really love sort of the romance in this book. And I'm curious how that came to you. And, you know, I'm sure it's, you know, I would love to hear the process of sort of developing a relationship like that through your writing, and because it is such a sort of feel good, fun story to be reading, and you know, you're rooting for these characters. How do you sort of bring that to life and, you know, get people to, you know, be rooting for that relationship?
A lot of my relationships that I create, these, the conflict, the actual tension between these characters, the main characters, are usually based on either some sort of nugget that is like true or something I've seen before in real life, and then taken to either an extreme or just brought along a fun journey. And in this particular case, the rival is a middle school rival, and it was kind of patterned after this group of brothers that my brother and I had to compete against when we were in middle school. And so they really do exist. It's not in a love interest sort of way, but the whole idea that our parents were always competing and then always dropping names and saying, oh, I heard that Gideon did X, Y, and Z. And, you know, what have you done? You know, and it got all the way to a point where, you know, it was all the way from schools to grad school, all the way up to like, currently, you know, how many kids do they have? Where do they live? I heard they bought a house, you know, so it's always been this ongoing thing with this family. And so I just at some point realized that you have a lot of tropes. And then one of them is enemies to lovers and or hate to love. And I thought it would be funny to have middle school rivals, like, because there are people who enter your life really early and then they stick with you through adulthood. And this was one of these situations where I was like, I think I can actually write about this because I have lived this life thanks to my very competitive parents.
Well, it's very fun to read about. You know, as you're sort of bringing the book to life, could you tell us a little bit about what your process is like? Are you someone who sort of sees where the story takes you? Are you a big outliner? What's your process like?
I used to be a complete pantser, which is somebody who just does not follow any outline. They just start typing. And I think that was just to get words out, to be able to be creative and free flowing with my ideas. Over time, I have not become a full plotter, but I have, learned how to have a beginning, middle, and end that conforms to what is typical. So I think my very first novel that I wrote was just a gigantic 300 word blog post. And I remember thinking, well, this isn't going to work. And I ended up kind of getting shelved. But after that, I started learning about how novels are actually structured, where there's, an inciting incident, and then there's a midpoint reversal. There's a climax and a dark moment, and then there's the ending. And in all of my stories, I've always wanted a happy ending. So I knew what kind of stories that I'd want to write, these romantic comedies that I that were inspired by me watching all the 90s and 2000s rom-coms and falling in love with those types of stories. So I think over time I've changed, but I'm not such a hardcore plotter where I know exactly where the story is going to go.
That makes sense. I'm curious, because this was going to be one of my questions for you too. Do you have any all-time favorite romantic comedies, either, from the heyday or any like contemporary ones?
I like both the ones that are just straight up, Harry Met Sally type of, that era. I used to love Hugh Grant and, love Julia Roberts. But Clueless has always been one that is sort of debated on whether it's a romantic comedy or not. Is it a coming of age? Is it a actual rom-com? Is it a romance in any way? And that's like deeply debated on the internet. And I think I write those types of books where there's a story, a character arc, in a journey that the character goes through, as well as having a love story in parallel. And I think because I love that movie so much, that I think I just like those types of stories.
Yeah, I feel like there should be, of course, I love reading romantic comedies, but I wish that we also would make it so that they were made into movies quite as often as they used to be, although I feel like Netflix is doing more lately, but I feel like there's never enough.
Yes, there's a lot of young adult ones that I feel like are coming out now. The one by Mindy Kaling.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I did like that one. Can't think of the name now, but
I know.
Never Have I Ever.
Yes, Never Have I Ever.
I liked that one a lot. And yeah, you know what? You're right. It is a lot of young adult. Because
yes,
the other one,
To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Yeah. So I'm hoping more get made in the adult space. Maybe somewhere in the age range between that and all the way up to, an older audience. But I would love to see more romantic comedies represented. Yeah.
Well, we'll just have to get So We Meet Again on Netflix, and then we'll be all set.
You can just tag them in your notes, episode notes.
I'm sure that's all it'll take. I did want to ask you about this too. You did already get featured on the Today Show, which I'm sure was so exciting. What was that like to see your book on there? I feel like that would be sort of an author dream to have.
It was. I still think back to that day for two reasons. One is I got a parking ticket that day because I was watching the show instead of moving my car. So that was one problem, but it was worth it. It was worth sitting down and watching it air live in Los Angeles. But most importantly, of course, the actual feature. I didn't know exactly what how they would talk about the book. That was the other thing is this book I've found has a lot of different themes that resonate with different people. So some people see it as more of a workplace commentary on male-dominated industries. I focus on the Wall Street culture. And so, you know, I bring up themes of racism and sexism. And then you have the cooking aspect and the food aspect. You have the mother-daughter relationship. And of course, you have the actual love story and the romance between Jesse Kim and Daniel Choi. And I didn't know what Harlan Coben would, you know, highlight in the book. And so it was wonderful to see that he called it like comfort food.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, that is so exactly what I wanted this book to be like for a reader. And also in the Today Show, just the write up online, he talks about it being a fun read, just, you know, just a great book for a fun read. And that's also what I definitely wanted people to get out of this book. It's definitely not a dark kind of brooding book. It's supposed to be lighthearted. You're supposed to laugh and enjoy the ride.
Which we definitely need right now.
Yes.
I wondered how that worked if you do get a heads up. So they tell you that it'll be in the segment and sort of to tune in, but you don't know what they're going to say.
Right. You know, the segment is called What to Read. And I found out that Friday before, and I knew it was going to air. I don't remember if I knew it was going to air on specifically on Wednesday, but that's when it did air. And I didn't have that many details about it. I just knew that he was going to select it, and then that they had sent copies, because nobody wants to like jinx anything either.
Right.
So my publicist didn't say like, oh, good news, heads up, this might happen, because that would be like devastating if it didn't. So she said she sent out copies and, you know, was happy to inform the entire team that this was going to happen. So it really just, I was just floored and numb, to be honest. And then when it did air, I was just happy because there was just so much going on in the news, but also just locally with politics. So I just had no idea if it would actually air or they'd get bumped or it would just be something that, was shortened, you know, and they didn't air it. So I was still on pins and needles just that day, just watching the news and glued to it, because I also didn't know how the time zones worked. So I was up at like 6 in the morning, you know, wired and for just East Coast feed, if that was going to air live, I didn't know. And then it turns out it aired after, I think, 9 o'clock my time in California.
That's so cool. And I do want to give a shout out to, I think your publicist, Kathleen Carter, is awesome. And she always connects me with great authors. So kudos to her too, the Today Show.
She's
so
wonderful.
Exciting for both of you. Yeah.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yes, Kathleen, you're awesome. Well, I would love to hear too about sort of any, well, and actually, I guess it's two part, because I'm curious if you can read these while you're writing, but do you have other favorite authors who write romances or romantic comedies that you really enjoy and maybe admire?
Oh, I have so many. I was just thinking through today how lucky I have been to actually be able to read in the pandemic this year. Last year, especially toward the beginning, I wasn't reading or writing very much, and it was really hard to kind of get started. But now I think I'm in a good rhythm. So I was able to read in the last, I think, three to 4 months, probably. I read Christina Loren's Soulmate Equation, which I loved, and Emily Henry's People We Meet on Vacation. Those two I read like back to back, and they were just nice big like hugs to it's just nice and fuzzy and warm and wonderful. I also read Incense and Sensibility by Sonali Dev, which is, I think, the third installment in her Jane Austen inspired series, and finished that one fairly quickly and then loved it. And also The Rehearsals that came out, I think, in July by Annette Christie, and that's a time loop Groundhog's Day inspired story where a couple is on their wedding day and they keep reliving the wedding day, and each chapter represents each time they have to restart it, and it's just a lot of fun. And it also shows like her range because so many things happen and go wrong and some go right, but you know, you just I just didn't actually know how it was going to end, to be honest.
Oh.
Yeah, and let's see if I have any. And then I actually read a lot of thrillers and mysteries too when I can, just for pacing reasons. I like to read it to have my a more fast-paced book and kind of get in the rhythm while I'm writing. And I think I usually end up writing when I'm writing my romantic comedies and contemporary women's fiction, I end up reading then thrillers and mysteries. And I think while I was drafting recently, I read The Guest List by Lucy Foley and just started The Push. And I haven't gotten too far into it, but it's pretty interesting so far.
That's a really interesting to sort of be in that headspace while you're writing, because I did feel like I was thinking back on the book today, and it did just have a lot of twists and turns, and I felt like I was just trying to, was on the edge of my seat to sort of see what would happen. So I didn't really think about kind of reading in a genre like that to sort of have it influence your writing. That's really interesting. Well, I wanted to ask you as well, because it is such a funny book. I would love to hear about your time as a stand-up comedian and how, that transitioned into writing these books.
When I did stand-up comedy, I did not know what I was doing at all. I thought I wanted to write humor, and I didn't know how that would look. Like, I didn't know if that was trying to get a job as like a columnist to, writing for cartoons. I didn't know how that would translate into a job or a profession of any kind. So while I was working in advertising full time, I was trying to explore on the side, like what I could do that would kind of get me toward that goal. And I ended up picking up stand-up comedy kind of on accident. And so the bigger accident is that I stayed with it for 10 years. And then at some point it was like, wait, this wasn't my end goal was not doing stand-up comedy. My end goal was to write humor. And I have to get back on track to doing that. So when I started looking into doing stand-up comedy, it came from me doing a Google search of I had Googled Korean American humor writer, and I guess the search results weren't that good back then because I only got stand-up comics that showed up on the first page, specifically like New York female stand-up comics. And I met with one of them, the top hit, and chatted with her about her career, and I just was like, I don't know if this is exactly what I want to do. But then she invited me to a show that she was performing in. It was like right next door to where we were meeting. So I watched her perform, and she basically told a bunch of funny vignettes and shorts, like anecdotes of her being a Korean American woman growing up in Seattle, Tacoma area. And the whole crowd was just like roaring and, going along with the story. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anybody tell a story about just being Korean American and people, be interested in it. And I had never thought to tell my own story or tell the story about being Asian in America before. And so when I saw her perform on stage, I was so inspired by that that I was like, oh, I've never, just really fired up. It turned out later that she had invited me to be on the show, but I thought she was inviting me to the show.
No.
It wasn't until the night before that she called to confirm that I was booked for a 5-minute set. And I was like, wait, I thought I was just attending the show to support you. But she was going through the Lincoln Tunnel and she had no reception. She's like, well, I'll see you tomorrow. I don't have reception and I'm going out late tonight. So I had to,
My
I know it's like a nightmare story. One day I'll write about this, but I'm sitting here going, what am I going to do? So for like less than 24 hours notice, I had to write a 5-minute set. And then I invited a bunch of my friends because I was like, well, you guys will laugh, because you're my friends and my, and you better laugh, right? So it's like you'll be in the audience, I'll plant you there. And I performed, and it's still crazy to think that I just was able to do that and get through it and not freak out. But I performed and was done with it, and I was relieved. I was walking out of the club, and one of the regulars at the club, he pulled me aside and he said, "Oh, was that, you know, you just performed, was that your first time?" And I said, "Yes, you know, that was." He's like, "Oh, I caught your set. You know, you'd be really good if you actually had jokes." And I thought he was insulting me. And so I was like, "Well, thank you." You know, and he's like, "No, I mean that, like, you have a setup, you have like a good rhythm, you have stage presence, but like, it would be really good if you actually had punchlines." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense." And so after that, I just kind of got into it. And it's this also this thing where you perform, and especially when you have a really good night, your jokes land, the crowd is really good. You know, it's just like one of those perfect storms. You feel wonderful after that night. And then you sometimes get, you know, have bad luck, and, you know, the crowds are really light. And I remember one of the worst performances I had was performing in front of four people in like, you know, midday crowd. It was like 4:30 p.m. And I performed and nobody laughed. And I was like, "Oh, this is terrible. I'm going to quit." And I walked out, and I was talking to some people, and the four people came out right after, and they were like, "Oh, we just wanted to say that we enjoyed your jokes." And I was like, "Oh, well, then why didn't you laugh?" And he's like, "We're not from this country, and we just walked in, and we didn't know we were walking to a comedy club."
Oh my God.
So I could have made this big decision based on some information that was not even correct. Like, I didn't even know, you know, they didn't even know what they were doing when they walked in. So I'd warmed them up, apparently. But it was a fun thing to do. It really helped me hone in on both kind of joke delivery, understand how beats work, and callbacks, and also just rhythm of jokes. And so I think that has all come in handy when I'm trying to write comedy in novels, where I feel pretty confident on how my humor comes across in a story, and then, you know, kind of understand how to sometimes, you know, use that to provide levity in a more serious situation, or even provide kind of an unexpected twist to something that you think is going to happen.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking too, as you were saying, with the group of four people, I would imagine maybe it was a relief when you would just sort of be able to send your writing off. And if you got a rejection, at least, you know, it was in like the privacy of your own, you know, house, looking at your computer screen instead of like being up on stage. Did it give you maybe like a thicker skin?
Yes, for sure. It did. There's this one comedian, Mitch Hedberg. He used to say, "You can't please all the people all the time." And last night, all those people were at my show. And I was like, that is how I look at life now, that you can't please everybody all the time. And humor is so subjective. And that's the one thing that being a stand-up comic helped me learn, is that, you know, there's no humor for everyone. And my type of humor might not land with another person, but, you know, I do know that some people enjoy it. So I did learn that. And that, I think that has helped me get a thicker skin when it comes to just writing books, getting it out there, and then myself. For the, you know, response.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, just lastly, I realized I had been interested to hear about your experience with Pitch Wars. Could you tell us about that?
I loved the Pitch Wars mentorship program. So when I first applied, I had just finished my novel. And this is the one that was the 300-word blog post, mind you. So it was not in the best shape. I did revise it and kind of have something that looked like a story, but it needed a lot of work. And I entered Pitch Wars with it. And my the two, there were co-mentors. They had read this, read my submission, and they said, well, would be willing to pick this up and work with you, but it's going to require a lot of work. Are you willing to put in the work? And I was like, yes, I am. I really need to learn how to do this. So it's turned out to be like a, almost like an MFA crash course in fiction writing, where one of my mentors was really good at, well, they're both good at everything, but one of them was really focused on pacing and plotting and planting, which was her word for foreshadowing. And so she's a mystery writer and a thriller writer. So she was like, this is how you kind of need to, you know, set up your story so it's more evenly paced. And she just gave me all this advice. And then my other mentor, she was great at pretty much everything else, characterization, or that's how they decided to team up to help me. And so what they told me was my voice and characterization was there. It was just now figuring out how to actually shape the story. So I rewrote maybe a third of it and then revised, obviously, the whole thing. But it was just a very rigorous, condensed process. Back then, it was, I think, 2 months to fully revise your manuscript before you enter it in. At the end of the program, they have an exclusive agent round where it's closed to the public, and the agents can take your pitch and your excerpt and then decide if they want to ask for a partial or full manuscript based on that. And it was just, at the time, I think you had 8 weeks to do everything. And now I think it's a longer process. I think it's 4 months now. They doubled it. Yeah. And it ended up being probably the best writing experience I've ever had, because not only did I end up with a better manuscript, I got an agent from that, and he's still my agent to this day, Brent Taylor. And we worked really well together. And so he was sort of like a junior agent, and I was like a new, you know, writer. So it worked really well. We were both kind of growing together. But the community was also wonderful. So all of a sudden, you know, you are in this, you know, Facebook group with a closed Facebook group with a community of writers that are all figuring out how to write books and sell them and try to make a career out of being a novel writer. And it was just really nice to have people understand kind of what you're going through when you have ups and downs. And then I think some of my best friends have come out of that program.
That's so cool. I've always wanted to hear more about that. So that's really interesting that it, you know, was such a good experience for you. And yeah, it sounds great. Well, I really hope that listeners go pick up So We Meet Again. It truly was such a fun escape and just would be a great comfort read for people to, you know, cozy up with. And just thank you again for coming on the podcast. It was so wonderful to hear from you.
Thank you so much again. And I really enjoyed our time chatting.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.